Everybody, welcome to the Art of Art Business. We were on hiatus for a little bit, getting a little bit of sun and enjoying the summer. And now we are back with artist Adam Shoub, pixel painter Adam Shoub, known as Square Painter on Instagram and Twitter. We are going to talk to him for a little bit of time. We have a great show that we're doing currently. It is up at Strictly CBD in Jersey City, New Jersey. And hello, Adam. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Fantastic. We're excited to talk to you. So let's go ahead and bring up your images, and we can talk about all these different pieces. So Adam, give us a little bit of background. How did you get into this idea of pixel painting, and what is it to everybody?
What is pixel painting to everybody? I don't know. I guess the same as it is to me, just painting squares. So I started messing around with it in college, probably around 05, 06. And then after I graduated, I never really messed around with it. And then with encouragement from friends, I got back into it. And then way back in the day when we had a website called MySpace that we used, Morgan posted a thing looking for artists for a show in Bushwick in February of 2009. And I reached out to him like, hey, got these pixel paintings. I got these older ones. I have some newer ones that I've been doing. Could I show there? And I did. And then after that, like, I was down in Brooklyn pretty much every weekend, Morgan, like couch surfing with you back then.
Yes.
Doing shows. Yes. It was crazy times, man. Doing tons of shows everywhere, Brooklyn, Manhattan, mostly, some up in Queens. So I was doing a ton of that. That's where I started. And then from there, I got involved in the retro gaming convention scene. And that was probably around 2010. And that's been mainly where my growth of Square Painter has been, is doing a lot of retro gaming conventions. I'm sure if you've been to any of the bigger ones in the United States, I have been at pretty much all of them, minus some ones in the Midwest. A lot of gaming conventions, a lot of, just Comic-Cons, things like that. So yeah, it's been an interesting 10 years of Square Painter, to say the least.
Adam, you've done an installation at a restaurant. Right? Didn't you?
I've shown at restaurants. I never did an installation of painting stuff there. Well, like, I sort of did. That was at Lasso. That was on the corner of like Kenmare and Mott right. Street. Exactly. Yeah. I remember like one of the managers came to your show, because that first show I met so many people. I made so many connections there. That was nuts. But yeah, Lasso, unfortunately, they're not open anymore. They were like pizza and like craft beer place. But I did some like paintings outside. Remember, I was out on the sidewalk doing those. I didn't know what I was doing then. I was still like crafting the Square Painter brand. I was still figuring out my style of what I was doing there. So I don't think they're there anymore, but those pixel paintings were there for a while. Like I would randomly see photos that would pop up, and like people would tag me, and I'm like, oh, hey, check this out. Someone randomly photographed your paintings that you did out on the street.
That's cool, man.
I would like to do a lot more. I have more of a hand
I figured.
I would love to.
It's perfect, you know, with the side of a building for you.
With bricks.
It's a perfect thing. You'll be back on the streets again. You'll be back on the streets.
I want to get paid this time. I did that for free.
I hear you, man. I hear you.
Definitely. So let's take a look walking through this this tour that we did, this show that we did. Let's get this in front of us. This is Legend of Dragon Ninja. Let's see if I can present this like that so everybody can see it. Looks great. Tell us a little bit about this for people who are interested in art, but not necessarily know what these, like myself, I'm not familiar with this. You're constantly reminding me what is what and what characters are what and as you're putting them together. So walk us through for a novice.
Sure. Well, the whole retro gaming thing, it's very niche. It's a very deep rabbit hole. This is from the popular game called Ninja Gaiden that had some of the like first and most amazing cutscenes on Nintendo. It's my favorite game on the Nintendo Entertainment System. So after you beat each level, it shows you another part of the story in the game through cutscenes. And it has like a very like action yet film noir kind of feel to them. So I wanted to take a whole bunch of cutscenes and put them together to kind of visually tell the story of Ninja Gaiden. So these are just seven of the random ones that I took, like the two ninjas in front of the moon. That's from the intro of the game. You holding your father down on the left. That's towards the end. The woman on the bottom right, her name's Irene. She is another character in the game. The guy with the purple face, that's the Jacquio. He's the main bad guy. So I just wanted to put together like this entire collage, essentially showing the story of Ninja Gaiden and having like the characters within it. You can't even tell the scale of this thing. It's huge too. It's 4 feet by 2 feet. Wow. You can't really tell until like if you see it up close or like with someone standing next to it. I actually originally did this one back in like 2012 before I refined my painting style. And then as I like learned how to paint better and better, probably around like 2014, 2015, I took this thing off my wall and I put a fresh coat of paint on it and cleaned it all up. So this one has been with me for a very long time. It means a lot. Like I said, Ninja Gaiden is my favorite game on Nintendo. And yeah, this one very near and dear to me.
Yeah, it's really awesome. I'll tell you, what's very funny to me is, you know, working in the computer graphics world, the acceleration of the processors has kind of allowed us to move away from this pixelization. And the fact that there's a whole art movement leaning back towards the 80s and 90s pixelization is pretty funny, right? Because as we get into more of a virtual reality and AI and VR, you kind of want to step away from this, but then you have those characters that are, you know, just everybody remembers them, Donkey Kong and all these characters that are really quite pixelated, and you've made a niche for yourself. It's quite
Thank you. I feel like I absolutely have. I mean, I'm not the only one within this niche. There are a handful of other people doing what I do. But there's a lot of other people within the pixel community that do stuff with perler beads or do digital art. I mean, nostalgia is an incredibly powerful thing, and that's where this plays in for video games that we grew up with in the 80s and 90s. And there actually has been in the indie game market, like in the indie game community, that a lot of games have the look and the feel, the tone of old 8-bit and 16-bit games.
Hmm. Are they coming out with new 18 and, is that what you're saying?
They're ones coming out all the time that are, you know, by bigger companies, smaller companies that are doing these retro throwback games, like pixel art and pixel games with pixel, like pixel-based games, graphics are still very much alive.
And we should say that your bread and butter are the smaller sized pixel art that you do on almost a daily basis. And those go for cheaper than what these are. These are more kind of gallery level artworks.
Yep. Yeah. So I have a very big distinction. So, here's another one that's from Streets of Rage. I did that last summer. But I have to go to your point, I have my smaller pieces, which yes, I do when I'm not, I apologize for the background. I'm moving into my first house that me and my partner are buying, and my entire life is in boxes right now. So I still have been trying to get stuff out almost on a daily basis. Usually anywhere from like 6x6 to about 11, 14, 12, 16, anywhere within that range of canvases are the smaller ones. And I try to keep those more affordable for pieces to have in a square painter original on their wall. And then what we're getting into now is the larger ones that, you know, John, that we're representing through Trigonal. And those are more gallery. Those are gallery pieces, which I would bring those to shows. And those would be more of like my backdrop to bring people in to sell the smaller ones. But we're moving these. I like that we're moving these into a gallery space.
And we should point out right behind you is probably your biggest.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, that one, move the camera just a little bit. Yeah, that's a big 4-foot by 3-foot Star Wars piece from the Empire Strikes Back. That one I did back in like 2015, and it's been to a lot of shows, and it's kind of gotten a little scuffed in like the orangey area where Bespin is. I need to go back and retouch that. So after I settle into my new home and get my new studio set up, I promise that one will be cleaned up. And we'll be in Trigonal somewhere and on display.
Fantastic, fantastic. So, okay, so here's Streets of Rage Showdown. And do you remember what the size is? I could look it up if you don't happen to remember.
This is 36 by 18.
Wow, so that's a very big piece, right?
Pretty big one. Yeah, like 3 feet by a foot and a half.
So and tell us what's happening here.
So this is the end of Streets of Rage 2. So the character on the left is Axel. He's one of the, actually, four main characters in the game now. So, I mean, he's one of the original three also. So it's him fighting against the main bad guy's bodyguard. So the guy on the right is named Shiva. It's like an iconic showdown of the two of them fighting each other. They use like similar martial arts styles, like within the lore of Streets of Rage. And the guy looking on in the background is the main bad guy, Mr. X. I love how he just is like kind of sitting there looking bored and nonchalant while the two of you are throwing down. So the moves that you're doing, so Axel is doing this, it's called the Grand Upper. It's like this punch that he does where he has like this flaming dragon around his arm. And Shiva is doing this kick called Final Crash where he like flips his leg over himself and it's on fire. So the design just worked really well to have like all this intensity coming together in there. And I wanted to do a Streets of Rage piece for a very long time. So I figured why not something as iconic as the end fight from Streets of Rage 2,
right.
Which is far right. away from
there's the a small difference with this one because it's a 16 bit.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Right.
A lot more color. With 16 bit paintings, I build everything out in Photoshop first using like pixel art from the game, like rips from the game. And then I go in and I clean up and I'll have to, you know, change colors around and make it work from digital art to a piece that could be painted for made into an art medium rather than just taking the straight pixels from the game. Cause sometimes the colors that they use on the screen, cause like the sprites are so much smaller when you blow them up, there's all sorts of odd, you know, color tones and choices and stuff would look good small, but when you blow them up, it's weird. So there's always tons of prep work. Like I probably spent a few hours at least, probably maybe six hours.
This one takes a lot longer, obviously.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
If it was an 8-bit piece at this size, this is still basically double the work.
Oh yeah. Oh, right. Absolutely.
Right.
And I'll have all sorts, like I have these little Tupperware things here where I keep all my custom mixes.
Right, so, and that's important.
About 20 of them on my desk just for this painting.
So you got to be very organized to make sure that when you make these mixed sets of paintings per painting, that they have to stay together.
Oh yeah,
you have to be very organized. If any of those go missing,
I write on them. I have my Sharpie right here. I write on them. It's like, you know, Streets of Rage for this, like, you know, for the gold pillars on the back. I'll write like Streets of Rage gold pillar, like steps 1 through 4.
Right. So step you one being the darkest of color matching. You have to start with really, you know, doing a big job on color matching in the beginning and testing until it looks cohesive. And I guess you only really know that once you start getting into the painting.
Oh yeah.
Make sure that you can compare it and right.
Well, I've been doing this for so long also that I just have inherent color mixes in my brain. Like,
right.
Just,
it's again, almost like, you know, the Nintendo palette, like, you
right,
know,
right. Well, the Genesis palette is this is the, from the Sega Genesis, which is different, but anyway, just
the
palettes, just generally how they work. Like, you know, for like the golden brown, like pillars in the background, I don't even, it's like second nature to me. I don't even think about it. I just start pulling like, okay, I'm going to need like burnt sienna and a little bit of burnt umber for like the darker part to bring it in on a darker tone. And then I'm going to need a little bit of yellow ochre on there and like yellow cad medium. And I'll probably have to throw like just a hit of orange in there and maybe a little bit of titanium white on the really, on the lighter yellows.
Bob Ross's favorite color, titanium white.
Yeah, what?
Bob Ross's favorite color.
Was it titanium white?
I think I also just loved hearing him.
I thought
say,
it was like,
you need a little bit of titanium.
Green was one he always used. That's like a...
what
like
is it called? Which one?
Type color. And manganese blue. Manganese blue, I use that. Hooker green, not so much. That's more like, you know, for like an evergreen type color, like in...
Right.
I'll start with a more like general, like, you know, medium right in the middle green, not one that sways towards yellow or
blue. I have to ask.
From there.
And sure. I know you probably hate when people are like, hey, Adam, why don't you just do this? And why don't you just do that? And I'm sure you get it all the time. But
all the time, I don't mind. I don't mind it. It's like if you're asking me for something like super complicated, it's like, well, you could pay me. And
you're
I
right.
You.
Right.
Like that.
I was just going to say, I don't know if anybody has done this yet. But has anybody done like a pixelated version of Bob Ross where he'll do like his typical painting, but it'll just be like happy pixelated trees? Like, has anybody?
I'm sure it has. Like, do some research. The Bob Ross has become such a brand. Like, you see Bob Ross merchandise everywhere. Like, Target has a section of Bob Ross crap. So, I'm sure that. That possibly exists. People have said, oh, why don't you do live painting and dress as Bob Ross? Like, right. I can't do that. I don't know. I've tried painting on Twitch. I just don't like it. I like painting in the studio by myself.
Yeah, you don't want it to know that there are like eyes upon you.
No, I don't like that. Or people have asked me like, oh, why don't you do live painting at conventions? It's like, are you out of your mind? Like, look at how big and crazy.
So many distractions.
Yeah, look how big and crazy. Like, I don't know how artists do that anyway. Like, even comic artists that'll do sketches and stuff. I don't get how they're doing that. While A, you have your massive setup there. B, you're interacting with a crowd. And C, you're selling too. You're selling your art. So especially all day at like a big convention, like I am engaged with people all day.
Oh, it's tiring, man.
It is. It's tiring. I'm doing that from like, you know, there's a typical day at a convention. Doors open at 10 o'clock in the morning and they go till 6-7 o'clock at night, which means I got to get up really early. I got to get ready to go. I got to be on the show floor by like 9, get ready to go, have whatever breakfast and coffee to just shove in my face and then be happy and ready to go and start selling as soon as doors open at 10 o'clock. I couldn't even imagine throwing in the component of painting while selling, especially with how meticulous and like detail oriented my work is.
It would take forever. You wouldn't get past 2 minutes with everyone asking you.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, Morgan, you're going to be selling with me at Too Many Games in October. You're going to see how friggin' busy we are. Side note, I got to show you the where we are on the show floor. We're in a very good spot. You're going to be very happy.
Nice. Yeah. And just to say before we move from this piece, one of the best game soundtracks.
Oh, one of the best ever. Yuzo Koshiro, man. He's a god.
Yeah.
This is You Are a Tetris Master.
Yep. So this is an Easter egg hidden only in the NES version of Tetris, because all the characters in there are licensed property from Nintendo. So I forgot what score you have to hit. It's like a million points or something outrageous in Tetris, and you get this screen. Now, for each of them, there's always like there'll be like your little bonus thing that you see is like for your score, there'll be like a rocket ship that takes off at the end. And as you get a higher score, the bigger the rocket ship, and eventually like it'll become like a big space shuttle, and then it's a UFO. And then if you get this outrageous, crazy screen, it's St. Basil's Cathedral, and then the cathedral takes off at the end while all the characters are dancing and playing music. It's become notorious in the retro gaming scene that this exists. And I wanted to do a Tetris painting for a long time, so I figured, why not? Let's do one and throw all of our favorite characters into it.
That's great. And is this must be up for like 2 seconds. So you're really good at the games in addition to being a really good painter.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is probably up for a couple of seconds in the game, but I found screenshots of it. I'm okay at Tetris. I was never able to get anywhere close to getting the score to actually see this in the game. So I just got some screenshots online and I put it together. And the screen is way, way, way bigger. Like where Bowser is way to the left and like the character like Samus and Link and like Mario and Luigi, they're all the way to the right. So I had to take this and fit this into a canvas. So this is a weirder size. This was 28 by 22 inches. And I like working in slightly weirder canvas sizes and challenging myself with that. So I just had to take all the different design elements that I wanted within this and move stuff around and just get everything to fit and still look like a cohesive design.
And I wanted to ask you this before, are you working, when you use the canvas, are you building a grid? And you're painting each individual square within that grid.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm hand drawing a grid. YouTube is a grind. YouTube is very difficult to build a fan base in. And I tried doing that for a long time. So you could go on, just look up Square Painter on YouTube after this interview, please. And I have about 100 time-lapse videos of paintings on there. Ones to just a small board where I would paint a Koopa Troopa or Mario or something on it. And the later ones that I was doing before I stopped, it would be like an 8x10 or a 9x12 where it was a whole scene on there. So you can see my process of how I'll just use a mechanical pencil and a ruler. I box off areas on the canvas and then I'll grid that. And then whatever the darkest color is, usually black, I'll just, you know, paint in the outlines so I know where everything is sitting. And then I just start building up layers of color on there where one thing is on the canvas relates to everything else. So everything has to be spaced perfectly. Wow. And I am hand drawing a grid on every single piece. I don't know how I would do pieces like this without that. Like, pixel art takes a ton of planning.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. This is the Robot Brothers.
Oh. So this is a combination of a lot of stuff from a lot of games. So Mega Man is one of the most iconic characters from Nintendo, I would say, any from the 8-bit, 16-bit history from that. I'm sure if you are a fan of retro games, you know who Mega Man is. So he's the blue guy. The red one is his brother, Proto Man. I believe those two sprites are from Mega Man 9, from a cutscene from that. And again, I edited it. I recolored it. I did some redrawing on that. The entire cityscape in the background is probably from 3 or 4 different Mega Man games because they all have similar art styles of the way the cityscape is drawn. So I just pick and choose buildings awesome. That I liked. I changed the color in the background to make it more like nighttime rather than daytime. Threw some trees in there just to kind of break it up. And then the grid at the bottom, I forgot where that's from. That's from one of the cutscenes from Mega Man where like you get, yeah, like it shows you like what weapon you get after you beat a Robot Master.
Just to remind everybody, so a lot of what Adam does, these scenes don't really exist.
Adam is
taking elements from, you know, like you said, like Mega Man 1, 2, 3, creating a city of his own. So these are scenes that don't actually exist. He's creating these.
Clarify that. Right. I'm getting ahead of myself. This scene is not a cutscene from a game. This is I took elements from different Mega Man games and created this scene. So this is my own custom design for this, which is something I absolutely love doing, is being able to take things and make it look like it's from one of the games and stand out and scream 8-bit, 16-bit video games that we know and love, but it's my own personal creation.
That's awesome. Hmm. Yeah.
And Adam, like on a weekly basis, how many, like you're getting people calling you and asking you to do kind of custom paints, paint jobs, like all the time. Like, what are you doing? Like three a week? How does that work?
Commissions? It really depends. Sometimes like I can have 3 or 4 commissions come in a week. And then sometimes in a month, I'll only have 1 or 2. It kind of ebbs and flows. Sales are always steady. Like it never gets old with the feeling when like I'll post a painting and then I get a notification on my phone that literally 5 minutes later it's sold. It just never gets old. That is the greatest feeling ever, that people like my work that much. But yeah, commissions have been steady. I have 3 back here on my Nintendo and Sega CD boxes, which have the systems in them. I have canvas on there too, with some paintings that are going, about 3 great commissions that have come in. I let everybody know that I'm moving. It's like those will be done.
Right. And most of the commissions come in via Twitter, Instagram.
Through my social media, Twitter and Instagram. I'm the most active on. If you follow me on there, I'm tweeting all day. Instagram, as soon as a painting is done, it's posted and put up on there. I've tried, since I'm not going to be able to get work done for like the next 2 weeks or so.
It's going to drive you crazy, man.
Yeah, I've been going nuts, cranking out a ton of work just to kind of like have, you know, for when people are asking me stuff, like
just to be ready for that 2
weeks. Yeah, exactly. Like, hey, I'm in the middle of moving into my house, but here, plenty of work. I'll be adding all that to like Instagram stories and stuff that's for sale. So yeah, I always have plenty of art. So,
and Adam, your family is an art family, right? Your father is an artist.
Oh yeah, my dad's 71 years old. He's been an artist his entire life. So he went to college, or he went to Parsons in the city, went to High School of Art and Design in Manhattan. And then he became a commercial illustrator. He worked for Woolworths for a really long time.
I had the pleasure meeting him many moons ago. And
seeing
his work up close, really something.
Yeah, really, my dad's work is something. So he was a
photorealistic.
Yeah, well, that was, I'll get to that. He was a commercial illustrator for a very long time, and then was also a graphic designer, so moved to graphic design, and then was a studio manager at some big ad agencies like YNR for years. And my dad is retired now, but he's still, like, he does photorealistic paintings, photography he's loved for a long time. So he's been mainly doing photography now. But Morgan, you've seen his work, you've known him. He has tons of old encyclopedias and stuff sitting around for you for your collages. Years. My dad loves you. My dad loves you. He wouldn't hold
this. No, he follows he follows my work. I follow his work.
Oh, yeah.
He's very nice. It's cool, man. Yeah, no, I hang out with your dad. I talk to your dad, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know, you wanna smoke a little bit with him and hang out. He'll be so down.
We'll have to take a trip next. You let me know next time you're going up to Monroe.
Yeah,
that's our hometown, Monroe, New York.
I'll let you know.
I just tell people Woodbury Commons because that basically
that's the only one. Yeah, I grew up 10 minutes from that crazy mall.
That continues to grow nonstop.
Yeah, I know. It just, you see that parking garage they have there? And there's like a casino. It's insane. Anyway.
It's basically Disney World for shoppers, if anybody wants to know. It's a Disney World. If you're a shopper, that's where you go.
This is Mario versus Lemmy Koopa.
Yes, Mario versus Lemmy Koopa. I think Lemmy is the fifth or the sixth Koopa kid you fight in Super Mario 3. So Super Mario 3, arguably the greatest Nintendo game of all time. Like I said, Ninja Gaiden's my favorite. I could agree Super Mario 3 is, like, overall the best game. It's an incredible platformer. It continues to inspire games today. So this is just a small little 8x10 that I did of Mario fighting one of the Koopa kids. They were first introduced into this. So Bowser was always the antagonist in the Super Mario Brothers series. Super Mario 3, they introduced his seven crazy children who were the seven bosses of the first seven worlds. I think Lemmy is the sixth one that you fight. I always liked him since he's so weird that his gimmick is that he rides around on this ball, this star ball, and throws other ones that bounce around the room while you're fighting him. So he was always like my favorite one.
We can't forget Lemmy is God.
He is, and he's actually named after all the Lemmy from Motorhead. That's who he's named after. All the
Koopas really
named. Oh yeah, like
that's yeah. That's Wendy really
named after like Wendy Williams, I think, and like
who chose the name?
Huh?
Who chooses the names for
who
the
knows characters? Them? Like the Japanese designers. It was just musicians that they liked, and they named all the Koopa kids.
No, I did not know that. That is a very cool fact.
Iggy Pop. Yeah.
Holy shit! I did not. Yeah, that is so cool.
Yeah, Roy Koopa Jr. is Roy Orbison because you know he's got the big sunglasses.
Oh my! You just blew my mind. Right?
Yeah, I'm shocked too.
This is just the crap you learn about, man.
Wow,
The guy who does Mario's voice since Mario 64, Charles Martinet, super nice guy. He's going to be at Too Many Games also. So these are the people I get to meet and hang out with doing all these shows.
But, I mean, I can't imagine how many times he just has to walk around and say, "It's a me."
Oh, he loves it. He loves doing
wow.
it. Yeah, wow. He's all about it. Really nice guy. But I've done so many Super Mario 3 paintings because this is such an iconic game, and there's so many scenes and so many moments that we all remember, and it's just a game we all love.
When my dad got this Mario game, 3. I did not leave that game until I won that game. I did not get up until I went
that's how we all were. That game was just in the Nintendo for months. I eventually I beat it with warp whistles at first, eventually warping to World 8, and then over and over and over again being able to get through it.
Right
one of the first Nintendo games I ever beat.
And this is one of the smaller pieces from the collection.
Yeah, this is a little one. This is only an 8x10. So this is one that I would have at any convention that I do. That's just it's a small, affordable piece that it's something that is very iconic, very recognizable, that a lot of people would like. And I like to have people being able to take home an original piece of my artwork and have it on their wall and for them to look at it, for it to make them happy. That means everything to me when someone says that. Like, I love your art. I see it every day and I smile. That I love.
That's awesome. This piece is Kirby and Friends. Also a smaller piece, right?
Yeah, this is 9x12. So this originally, it came from like Kirby's Pinball on Game Boy or something like that. One of the backgrounds, which was black and white, because, you know, Game Boy only had two, or black and green, whatever it was. There was only two colors on the screen. So I ripped this design apart, overhauled it, moved everything around, threw the tree background wasn't in there. I made this, I took a very basic layout and made it into this whole thing. So the tree in the upper left is an iconic boss from the Kirby games. He's always like the first level, wherever you're going through the woods, you fight him. And these are just some other random enemies from the game, but they always are very cute. And I just kind of feel like, you know, if they weren't fighting each other in a video game, they would all be friends in this cute little world that they live in.
Cool.
I've never gotten tired of painting Kirby either.
And this is Link versus Ganon.
Yes, this is another 8x10, the end of The Legend of Zelda.
Very stressful time in a young man's life when they see this scene at the end of the game.
Yeah, it's scary. This is a big thing, too, because like, it's a big reveal, because you don't know what Ganon looks like.
Right.
Just hear the name Ganon. He's this overlord, right. Whatever he is. And then you see him, and he's this massive, like, turquoise pig monster. And you got to have like all the correct items, you know, the silver arrows in order to like, you know, that's how you beat him. When you stun him with the master sword, then you got to hit him with the arrow. I didn't beat this game until I was like 23 and in college, because I didn't know what the hell to do when I was a kid. The first Zelda game I got into was Link to the Past on Super Nintendo. But
yeah, that was great. That's also like next to Mario 3. That was like the next in line of just like one of the better experiences.
Link to the Past is one of the greatest, I will say, one of the absolute greatest video games of all time. It's flawless.
Enjoyable. It's so enjoyable, yeah.
But this is from the original Legend of Zelda. Right. So it's when you first face off against Ganon. So I just wanted to have like Link coming into the room and Ganon there waiting for him. Anybody that's a fan of Legend of Zelda is going to know exactly what this piece is.
Very cool. This is Pokey and Gygas Mean Business.
Okay, so So this is from the end of Earthbound, a very niche, weird game, but has a very big fan base right now. I know where Morgan is going. He's going to get something. So this is an interpretation of the ending of when you fight Gygas. Essentially, Gygas is supposed to be this like giant being that it doesn't even have like a physical form, but like he sort of does. So you're walking along on like these tentacles and like this eye with Ness's face on there. It's never even explained of exactly what it means. It's very abstract. So the four robots in the bottom are your four characters in the game. And you have to go through this surgery to have your souls taken out of your body and put into robots to be put back in time in order to fight Gygas. This is more of an interpretation of having the four robots of your characters looking on. Morgan, you understand what I'm talking about.
People who know
Earthbound will know exactly what I'm talking about. This is for a fan of Earthbound, not just like a more casual fan that is like, oh, this is Super Mario 3. This is Sonic the Hedgehog.
I always thought that it was interesting that Ness became, because it is such an obscure game, but I always.
Not anymore, but it was.
That they kept like, you know, like Ness to Super Punch Brothers. I was surprised. Okay. I was like, wow, is he Smash popular Bros. Enough to be here? But that's the thing. It's got a very strong cult following.
Yeah, it was a very cultish game back in the day. It was a very weird game. I grew up with it. I absolutely love it. Earthbound is, like, Ninja Gaiden is my favorite on the NES. Earthbound overall favorite game ever.
Remind people, the thing that made Earthbound very different is that it was very funny.
It had very funny humor, but it had a lot to say about life and friendship and love, and it just helped me get through a very awkward strange part of my life of being just like this lonely, weird 14-year-old kid. It just really just hard
to get through. If people have never played the game, the way to save the game is you have to call your dad on the phone. Or is that when you get money?
You need money for payphones, but the black phones, those are free.
Right, so that's...
But yeah, you got to call your dad to save the game.
Save the game, right.
Yeah,
right.
You call your dad. You never see what your dad looks like. He's just a phone.
Right. You never do.
It's just the weird quirkiness of it. But anyway, so Pokey, Gygas is the main, like, abstract final boss. Pokey was, like, your best friend that essentially sold you out and started working with Gygas. He's the little fat kid with the blonde hair in that, like, spider machine that Gygas had gifted him with. The title of this, Pokey and Gygas means business, comes from the music. The music of Earthbound is amazing too. When you fight Gygas, it's this like metal as fuck, like Pantera type tune that starts playing, and it's called Pokey Means Business. That's it. That's the name of the song. So that's where the name Pokey and Gygas mean business.
Another thing about this game with, you know, having a crazy soundtrack is that the game is so long, so that there's what? How many, let me ask you, how many songs are on Earthbound soundtrack?
Oh, probably over 100.
There's over
100 songs in the game.
And they're all awesome.
Yeah, all the different battle music, and some of it gets so weird. Like I've read interviews with the guys who composed the music. I think it was like three guys that worked on it. And it was like a virtual playground of just, they can compose whatever the hell they wanted. I mean, like I said, there's like some rock and like heavy metal track for this, but then there's all this weird avant-garde jazz that they're doing in there.
Really,
and like,
weird.
Yeah, like they really, really got to experiment.
Let me ask you something. I know this group, we're falling off track here, but do people like that ever play? Like, is that not something that happens?
That what?
Like those people that made the music for this video game, have they ever played live?
Oh yeah.
So you're telling me that the people composed and created the music. So you're telling me that there was a show at some point where it was an Earthbound show?
Probably. Or they just I know these guys. There's this band called the Earthbound Papas, and like they play. I think it's different. I don't quote me on this. I think it's other people that cover Earthbound music, and they've had some of the original composers come on and play shows with them.
You're going to have to school me after this. You're going to have to drop some YouTube links. I got
all right. That I could be wrong. I know there is a band called the Earthbound Papas. They cover Earthbound music, and I'm pretty sure some of the original guys have been involved in that. But
that is so cool.
Yeah, it is. Oh, dude, too many games also. There'll be a whole bunch of like BGM cover bands, not to mention a band called Rex Viper.
You're gonna have to talk about that. You get a little bit at least.
We'll get to that later.
Okay, we'll move forward.
Yeah.
This is Krang and Shredhead.
Yeah, not a Cylon and a plate of meat. John. Right.
Correct.
That's what you referred to it as in an email, and I got a good laugh from that. How'd you not? You really didn't know? You don't know Ninja Turtles?
So, you know, I am older than both of you.
Right.
I had the Atari 2600, and I had Donkey Kong that I played until both of my thumbs went flat. So this part of my thumb, most people have like a bulbous thumb. I have a very fat, flat thumb because at that time, we had a handle that was like a joystick like this. And then we had to keep pressing this button. And that was the only controls that we had.
Just to remind you, Jonathan, this was a comic book, though, way before.
A comic first, and then a cartoon.
Video game, right.
And then there was a video game.
Then a cartoon.
Blew up.
Right.
Tons
of toys.
Oh, God.
you know what? I must have just missed it.
But
I will say that, you know, Link, the Legend of Zelda, the original Legend of Zelda was very big in my house. Because then we went into the NES system.
Right.
And that was my brother. He's 9 years younger than me. So by the time I got back into the video game scene, it was Legend of Zelda and Tetris. Like, that was what was being played in my house all the time. Then you jump forward even further, and then I had Xbox, and I was playing Halo. But, like, I'm not, like, I understand, like, you play games all the time. You're in that, like, gaming world. Like, every once in a while, when there's a major upgrade, that's when I get involved. You go Atari 2600 to the NES system to the Xbox to now, like, waiting for Virtuix to come out with an in-home virtual reality platform. And so that'll be the next thing that I, you know, that I
play. I have to say, I stopped playing video games when video games were no longer pixelated.
Really?
That's the truth.
Interesting. Yeah. Modern games.
Yeah, I never even went forward with Halo, never even moved forward.
You're crazy. There's so many good games, man.
Yeah.
Like, everyone thinks I play only retro games. To be honest, like, I paint retro games more than I play them nowadays. And when I have time to play video games, I'm playing on my PC. So, like, I was just, like, right before this, I was playing Sniper Elite 4, which came out in, like, 2019 or 2018 or something like that. Modern games are amazing nowadays.
Yeah. And also, the other thing is that, you know, back when I was a kid, we couldn't save a game.
No.
You played until you played.
Yeah, you
turned it off and had to start all over again.
Had the battery save, which was amazing.
That was the first time?
Games had passwords, and the passwords were like 40 characters long.
Oh, man, did I hate that. And if you have been handwriting, write out that 30 code thing.
And like, the ones will look like an I or an L, or the zeros look like O's.
The Mega Man was a nightmare.
Easy. Mega Man was easy because it was on a grid. It was the letters and numbers, and you would plug the ball in, that red and the ball. That's
right,
easy.
Right.
I'm talking like Legacy of the Wizard, where literally it was like 40 characters on the screen to remember everything. So, like, because everything.
That's really mean by the designers to do the like,
the items you had, where you were. That's like what every character represented in the code, and like the way the characters were put in dictated like where it was. It's crazy.
I guess it made you smarter.
Yeah.
You had to work.
You had to work. But this one, Krang. Oh, okay.
Sorry. No, go ahead.
Krang and Shredhead. This is, if you're a fan of Ninja Turtles, Morgan, like, do I have to explain to you what's going on here? If you're a Turtles fan, like, it's Shredder. Well, I used the design of more like from Turtles 2 when he pours the mutagen on himself, and it's like big Shredder. And Krang is just—he's the warlord from Dimension X, and it's just that they're right in front of the portal in the Technodrome, going to Dimension X. I know, John, I'm speaking another language to you.
Totally.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah.
You know how many people you would piss off if you did a water level painting? People would want to attack. You have?
I did it purposely of one of the turtles swimming through the. Like one of the really bad parts with all the seaweed that
is
that
he getting shocked? Do you have him getting shocked?
No, I haven't done that. I try to, because that would be like a negative connotation. I try to keep with my paintings positive, neutral to positive.
Right.
You always see, I never have negative stuff going on in my painting.
You know what? They have this crazy glow in the dark paint now.
Maybe I'll do that. I mean, someone commissioned me for it, but I had him like swimming through and like, every comment was like, this gives me anxiety.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It would give me anxiety. To just explain, Jonathan.
No, that part. This I remember. I remember. That was the, yes.
Turtles?
Yes, for some reason, it's coming back to me. I'll tell you, older than you guys, so my game like that was Pitfall, where you wound up in, like, you could fall into another level underneath the whole game.
Right.
So the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle thing, there was that very creepy, like, water level that you had to get through, or you, if you didn't come up for air, you would drown.
No, basically, you have to get the bomb, you have to find all the bombs.
This was a different one. From the first Turtles game.
It's easy to die. Long story short, it's very difficult.
There's a billion things to kill you. You got to swim through this underwater maze, and you got to defuse bombs, and there's a time limit, and everything, like, you touch the wall, it kills you. Like, there's all this electric seaweed everywhere. Once you know how to do it, it's not that bad. I can do it. I'm playing the games over and over again, but it's a very notoriously difficult as fuck level. One of my bandmates is like the OG game reviewer, the angry video game nerd, James Rolfe. I'm in a band with him. He did probably one of the first episodes I saw. He reviewed the original Ninja Turtles, and that's, he has a whole shtick in that video going on and on and on about how horrible the water level is.
Oh, wow. So this is George and Lizzie. What
right, these are two. Okay, so there's three characters actually from Rampage that were in the arcade version. This is the NES port. They can only fit two. So George is the big ape that's not supposed to be King Kong, and Lizzie is the giant lizard that's not supposed to be Godzilla at all. I met the creator of Rampage at a show, this guy Brian Collins, super nice guy. So anyway, these are, you could pick these two characters and in the beginning of the game, and these are just the character portraits of which one that you pick. And people love Rampage, so I figured why not paint these two.
Looks great. And what are the sizes on these? These are small.
These are 8x10 also. They're sold as a set together.
Nice. This is the Link to the Past.
Link to the Past. So
beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is a very tall piece, right?
It's 30 inches high by 10 inches wide. So what this is, if you know Legend of Zelda, the entire title screen, it says Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past, only the Z in the title of Zelda has this very iconic drawn Z, and like the Master Sword comes down into it. So I always love the way that looks, and I love taking iconic things from a game, especially a title screen or something, and just painting that as it represents the game and everybody knows exactly what it is. So I isolated that, and I wanted to mess with this for a long time. And I saw, it'll fit on a 30 by 10 canvas. And then I took like the background from the intro of Legend of Zelda with the mountains and it being reflected in the water, and took design elements from that and essentially used that to build the scene behind this.
Wow. Very, very cool.
Yeah. I love that one.
In addition to that, pieces that I didn't have time to add for the presentation, let's just take a look. We've got them up on Artsy. This is your entire show here. We'll go to the show in a second. But the two pieces that I didn't have time to add was Hero of Time and Dr. Wily's Robots. And this is Hero of Time. This is 10 by 30.
Yep.
What's happening here?
These are the seven main characters from Chrono Trigger, another game that is a flawless 10 out of 10, one of the greatest video games of all time.
Agreed.
The Super Nintendo, especially Squaresoft on the Super Nintendo, just cranked out masterpiece after masterpiece of RPGs. This was the final one that they did that was like a culmination of everything that they were doing. The game is amazing. So the game, it takes place in all these different time periods. You start as the character Chrono in the top middle, and you meet all these other characters on your journey. And I just wanted to put all seven of them together in a very iconic background, the Millennial Fair, like the first place that you go in the game. Morgan, I'm sure you understand exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's one of my favorite games. Yeah.
Yeah. I've beaten this game more times than I can count. So you can have up to three characters in your party. So you can, by the end of the game, you can have any combination of any three of these characters. And depending on who you have in your party, and when you finish the game, you get a different ending depending on that. So there's like 20 different endings to this game. It's amazing. Wow. Wow. I've never gotten all of them, but
now this is so large that I can only imagine that when you're working pixel by pixel, mm-hmm. it must just like get mind-boggling. You have to kind of chill yourself out. Right?
It's dizzying, and I have to do it a piece at a time. So this one, it's 30 inches by 10, so it's about this big or so.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I'll draw out the boxes first of like how high and wide each character is, and I'll have them on the canvas, and then I grid those, and I start painting in the black. And like I said, each one is, you know, the spacing of it is based off of everything else. And then from there, like I just drew off like the areas where like the paths are on the left and right and on the bottom, and I use the same colors for that. So after I have the characters drawn in, I'll draw a grid for that, and I start, you know, painting in layers from this. So every, like I said, everything works together on it, and you work on one piece at a time. You can't jump into this and be like, I am going to do this all at once. You got to start very, very, very basic, and you build up layers and layers and layers of paint, and You know, there's always mistakes. I have to go back. I have to white stuff out. I got to repaint stuff. Even now, I've literally done thousands of paintings throughout my career of square painter. You're still going to make mistakes because it's so meticulous of what you're doing.
That's great. And the other piece is, let's see, this is Dr. Wily's Robots.
Yeah, so this is not anything that happens in the game. Dr. Wily is the main antagonist from Mega Man. The first game had his six robot masters. Again, everybody knows these six. So I just wanted to have them all, and I used the background from like one of the Dr. Wily levels from the first one to essentially put them in his lab together.
Very
cool. 36 by 12.
Very, very cool. So everyone can go right now to the Game On, the Pixel Paintings of Adam Shoub in artsy.net. It'll be up through August 9th, of course, on Trigonal, on Artsy. It'll be up even after that, but Trigonal likes to, Artsy likes to have yes and stop dates. I don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense. You actually sold two pieces very recently. You sold Castle of Jakuyo.
Yep. And the Ryu throwing the Hadouken. And it's kind of funny. Both of these characters, they're from two separate games. They're both named Ryu. It's funny.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, very.
That one was from Ninja Gaiden, and this is from Street Fighter 2.
That's great. Well, look, yep. We're hoping that you sell out throughout the show. It's really fantastic.
I would very much hope so. So those two pieces went to this guy who owns a video game store in upstate New York, and he's bought a number of pieces from me before. Super nice guy. So he bought those. I think those are going. I don't know if they're going in the store or in his own like home collection, but either way, I'm glad they went to a good guy.
Nice. Very good. Well, Adam, this has been a really great conversation with you. I really appreciate you spending the time. I know you're boxing up stuff, and you've got a lot of stress on you.
Man, this just goes on.
Wow.
Moving is a stressful thing. There's no doubt.
Yeah, it is.
Absolutely. Well, look, we're gonna end this show now, but stick around. We'll have an after show and discuss a couple of things. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. Again, all of this artwork is in – let me just stop this. All of this artwork is available at Strictly CBD in Jersey City, New Jersey, through August 9th. You can stop in there and say hello, pick up some good CBD. We're always supportive of that. And the next show will be Stacy Petty. He is also an amazing artist, and we have that show coming up. Thank you all for watching. Stay tuned for more news. Make sure to subscribe on our newsletter and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and follow Adam on Square Painter on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and all of that.
Not my Facebook. I don't really use my Facebook business page too much anymore. I mean, you could. It's all right. I still post on there. It's just the organic reach for Facebook business pages isn't the best. So Instagram and Twitter are like my main hubs. So please contact me on there, comment on any of my stuff. If you want to DM me, I'll be more than happy to talk to you.
Very good. Thank you all for being here. Have a great week.